Welcome to The Wrap Up, a weekly podcast that gives you an insider's look at the top stories in Hollywood. I'm your host, Sharon Waxman, the founder and the editor-in-chief of The Wrap. Joining me is my co-host, Daniel Goldblatt, our assistant managing editor. Hey there, Daniel.
Hey, Sharon. I was in Vegas this weekend, which is not the greatest choice I've ever made, considering, but everyone was pretty safe. I watched a lot of basketball in an arena, masked, the whole nine, made me feel a little better. And I'm not a big casino person, so I was never really in too much of that. You know, I'm not a gambler, but it's a shame. I thought when I planned this trip, I thought we would be out of this, or at least on the, you know, it seemed
Did you go in the pool?
The Delta variant had it. No. Look at this complexion. Do I look like I go in the pool? You can't see me for podcast listeners.
He's
I'm very pale. Very pale.
All right. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you. So on the podcast this week, Renee Elise Goldsberry sat down with Rap Women to discuss her Emmy nomination for her role as Angelica in Hamilton and her work on the Peacock series Girls 5 Eva. She talks about how she thinks the diversity in Hamilton has affected theater productions and whether or not she wants to see more shows go the same route and do live filmed productions.
She also got offered, Andy tried to get Renee to adopt her. So that's a fun part of that interview. I don't think it's going to work.
We'll see. By our two Rap Women podcast hosts.
Yes, it's a good little interview. But first, Sharon, let's get into some headlines. You know, it's been a bad week to be a Cuomo. On Tuesday, soon-to-be former Governor Andrew Cuomo resigned after initially saying he wouldn't, following a slew of sexual harassment allegations. But his brother Chris is not having a great week either. A report in the Washington Post said he is still advising his brother on the scandal, despite apologizing for doing so previously and admitting that he put CNN in a bad spot. And it seems that brotherly connection is affecting his ratings, particularly with women. He saw a 21% drop in female viewership last week, according to Nielsen. CNN has not disciplined Cuomo this far, and Brian Stelter, their media correspondent, defended the network's handling of the situation. And even Tucker Carlson defended Chris Cuomo, and I'm not sure if that – now I don't know which side I'm even on when that happens.
Exactly.
Sharon, what do you think CNN should do here?
I think it was a sticky wicket all the way around, but I don't think CNN's done a good job after initially having this slightly fumbled – situation when the allegations first came out against Andrew Cuomo, when the report by the Attorney General was submitted and all of these calls come to resign. And then there was story after story about Chris Cuomo ignoring the biggest story of the day, show after show after show, and saying, okay, well, I can't touch this because it's my brother. CNN deciding not to have Chris Cuomo take a leave of absence, I think, was the wrong call. He went on vacation, which is not the same thing as going on a leave of absence. And Brian Stelter now has come under a lot of criticism for defending the network and saying they're doing the best they can. And I like Brian, but Brian does set himself up as the sort of arbiter of what is right and good and ethical in journalism. He's constantly criticizing Fox News correctly, I believe. And so he has an extra burden to be very, very clean in every situation because he places himself in the position of being the guy who says, this is what our journalistic ethics ought to be. This is what a democracy needs to be. Is this, you know, Trump is a liar and Fox News is perpetuating those lies, which he, you know, effectively and energetically put forth over 4 years. So for him to be defending CNN right now over Chris Cuomo he shouldn't even have to do that, by the way. He has a book out and he can go out and talk about that book and be asked about it. And he can say, and probably should say, you really need to ask Jeff Zucker about that. That'd be the worst thing he could say. But if there's criticism to be made, he's got to play fair pool. So right now, I think that CNN doesn't look great in this situation at all. Wouldn't have been that hard. I keep asking, like, what does Jeff Zucker have who runs CNN? Like, what is it in him that is preventing him from just pulling Chris Cuomo out of the situation and saying, we've asked him to take a 3-month leave of absence because there's too much conflict of interest? It's the same thing that made me question why he didn't take Jeffrey Toobin off the air. I don't know if there's like a bro culture going on there after Jeffrey Toobin was caught masturbating, blah, 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 during that New Yorker call, right? To go back to more ugliness. Men, can you keep your hands to yourself, please? So that's what I think. I think Brian looks bad. I think CNN looks bad. Jeff looks bad. Chris looks bad. Everybody kind of looks bad. What do you think?
I think, and we debated this, I think, months ago. I think CNN muddied the waters from the very beginning when they let Chris interview Andrew during the pandemic about what was going on in New York. And I think they could have
CNN then. Right.
They could have established church and state right then and there and just said, you know what? It's just not great for you to have your brother. We have 23 other hours of the day. We can have Andrew Cuomo on plenty of other shows. He just doesn't have to do yours. And I think it's fine for Chris to not deal with Andrew's story on his show. Again, there's 20 other hours of the day that they can talk about it. But if he's going to, as a member of the media, decide to advise his brother on the side, that's where I think they run into issue. And that's where CNN needs to say, you can do one or the other. You can't do both at the same time.
See, for me,
and
it's like, it's
that's where I find the issue.
Yeah, I never had a problem with Chris Cuomo having his brother Andrew on during the pandemic when it was a matter of public health and public information. This is different. When Chris Cuomo says that he's advising his brother on sexual harassment allegations, that automatically makes him, taints him as a spokesman of, as somebody who's informing the public, because that it's a news story. At the time, Andrew Cuomo wasn't the news story. The pandemic and how it was, it had a hot spot in New York was the story. So that was the point where it really should have not been a difficult call. And not only did they leave him on the air for reasons I don't really know, they've continued to do that while Chris Cuomo was continuing to advise his brother. It just seems like a very easy call. Keep your hands clean. Keep the networks and reputation. That's your reputation, right? It makes it real hard to point fingers at Fox News if you don't keep your own house super clean. Anyway, here we go. Moving on. We're less than a month away from the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Really hard to believe because I'm sure those of us who were alive then remember it like yesterday.
Yeah.
A lot of networks are expected to roll out specials, needless to say, reflecting one of the darkest days in American history. But TLC apparently is going in a different direction and is airing a 9/11 special starring the Long Island medium Teresa Caputo, where she will meet with the victims' families and, quote, deliver messages of healing and heroism from the spirits of their loved ones. This is an interesting choice. Daniel, what do you think about this?
What a terrible idea. What an absolutely god-awful idea on just every level. Tone deaf does not
even
begin.
Is she somebody's cousin? I don't know.
Describe this.
Right.
If you believe in that stuff, okay.
Right.
Her having a show, cool. If you want to go on it, fine. But this is an event that affects a lot of people. I'm sure if I lost someone in 9/11, the idea of this airing would disgust me. The people that wanted to participate, okay, they made that choice, I guess. But there's a larger group that is represented by 9/11 and the people who died that day and were affected that day. I just cannot imagine the thought process that went into thinking that this was a good idea. Everything about it rubs me the wrong way. There's not one little thing where I can go, but maybe no, none of it makes any sense to me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Part of me hopes that smarter heads prevail, however the expression goes, and this never
wiser
sees the
heads,
light of day.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Sharon, are you someone who goes to a medium or
yeah?
Likes
oh yeah,
that kind
that's
of stuff?
Me all over. Like I'm big into.
I would have bet $1 million on
exactly.
Pretty confident.
I mean, it's really just more what you're saying, which is just feels like it's in very poor taste. Whether you believe in that kind of spirit world or not, it feels like very bad taste. And anything that could further cause pain to the families of who suffered on that day. And of course, it was a national trauma too. Feels like you should just kind of steer away from. But we'll see.
No, I just
it's a free country, Daniel.
I know it is, and I will not be tuning in. And I I hope no one else does.
Okay.
All right. Finally this week, is it Time's Up for Time's Up? The Survivor Advocacy Group is in the news for all the wrong reasons. Board co-chair Roberta Kaplan resigned after it was revealed that she and Time's Up president Tina Chen aided Andrew Cuomo and his office on how to respond to sexual harassment accusations and retaliate against accusers. Mm-hmm. In an open letter to the group, a number of survivors and victims said the organization, quote, lost its way and called for the group to, among other things, conduct a, quote, third-party investigation and issue a detailed report illustrating the full extent to which Time's Up and National Women's Law Center board members and staff members have been approached by, offered advice to, or are representing perpetrators of harm, end quote. Mm-hmm. Allison Turcos, one of the organizers of the group that published the open letter, told The Wrap that Time's Up has yet to address any of their concerns. Sharon, I know this is an important issue to you. What do you think Time's Up can do to right the ship?
Yeah, this is a very sticky situation. Tina Chen so far has avoided demands, anything like what happened to Roberta Kaplan. She resigned. But she is also tarnished by this because she is seen as somebody who was helping an abuser or an alleged abuser rather than supporting survivors. And with Time's Up taking a prominent role, for example, in the Golden Globes dispute, which, you know, many of us watching the demands of the HFPA reform and become more diverse and bring in Black members, et cetera, and root out the corruption of the organization, we're sort of confused by the fact that Time's Up became one of the organizations that was out there front and center demanding change. So the survivors who we talked to, which included Allison Turcos, who spearheaded this letter that was signed by 47 survivors, and we talked to Lou Godbold, who also is a very articulate member of the survivor community who runs a trauma training program for survivors. They just point out, like, if Time's Up is not devoted to supporting us, then who is? Like, this should be the mission that animates this organization. And there are also a lot of people who I saw, because I'm very involved in on Twitter, follow a lot of those survivors. They follow me back. We talk all the time, who said Time's Up is doing amazing work, particularly with its legal defense fund and providing money for not celebrity women who are dealing with assault or allegations that they want to bring and couldn't afford a lawyer. And so that they're doing a lot of really important work. But I think that this group are not the only ones who've wondered whether Time's Up has wandered off its mission. And the other issue there is that it's hard because the people running Time's Up, Tina Chen and Roberta Kaplan, are very prominent Democratic activists. Tina Chen was in the Obama administration, et cetera. And so when it comes to political figures who are on the Democratic side of the aisle, it becomes a little complicated. And this is an example of that.
I think you brought up a good point, the Golden Globes thing, as well as, you know, they weighed in on Scarlett Johansson's lawsuit against Disney.
Right. They called it like a gender, what did they call it? A gendered attack or something, I think was the phrase.
Which
I didn't quite get myself. But yeah.
On its face seemed fine. Okay. But I feel like Time's Up over the last year or so has become similar in a way to like PETA, where if you see a story about animals, you're like, oh, reach out to PETA. You know, they'll give us a comment. There's an easy story. Right. It just sort of became like Time's Up with someone you can reach out to on a women's issue and they'll give you a comment and you get a story.
Or other
and
issues.
Or now other issues. And right. Even if it was contention related, it's not there for. And I think that's the main point that these 47 people were trying to make is that like, you have a specific purpose. Stop, you know, don't widen your lanes and get out of that group that you're supposed to be supporting and helping, especially not literally the opposite side of it. Like that's completely unforgivable. But I just think to your point, the focus is missing and that's the key. And I think they just need to get back to doing what they were supposed to do from the beginning, what they were created for. Yeah, I think that's
exactly. And that's I do point. Think that's what the survivors are saying, actually. They're not saying that Time's Up is corrupt. They're saying, and Time's Up has had its problems. They've gone through a couple of different leaders. For various reasons, they've had to step down. They've had their own issues, but fine. It's like nobody's perfect. No organization is perfect. But I think their point is like, we actually need you to support, to be there to support us and not get pulled off into other kind of media friendly and headline grabbing kinds of issues. And I think that Time's Up, if nothing else, has a duty to listen very closely when survivors speak.
Absolutely. No. All right. As always, we like to conclude this first segment with a little something we call Wax On, Wax Off, where we allow our founder and editor-in-chief, Sharon Waxman, the opportunity to speak out about something she's particularly into this week, her Wax On, and something she's a little more riled up about, upset about, angry about even, her Wax Off. Sharon, as always, exactly. The floor is yours.
Why, thank you. My Wax On this week is going to be about the fact that our government seems like it's getting something done. The Senate has passed a $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill, which is kind of crazy to think. I mean, it's a 10-year project, it's not all being spent in the next couple of years, but it's so vitally needed in this country. And it did have bipartisan support, which they said it couldn't be done. Even Mitch McConnell came forward and praised President Biden for getting this done. And now, of course, it goes to the House, where we've already passed, I gather, a trillion-dollar infrastructure bill, which is just sort of covering more of the bare minimum types of projects that need to get done. But it's very exciting. They're calling it the biggest, I would say, government-led social works program since either, I guess, Lyndon Johnson or since, actually, they're saying since FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed into all of these various works after World War II. So we all see the country falling apart at the seams, quite apart from the climate crisis, things that need to be addressed as well. But I have to give a shout out because we've been in an environment where we feel like nothing can get done with members of both parties participating. So really, let's hope this is the beginning of laying the groundwork for more bipartisan support and seeing this bill actually passed all the way through and getting to signature on Biden's desk. That's my wax on. My wax off is this very, this wizened, halting spoken, strange man named Robert Durst, who is on trial for murder in Los Angeles. He's on trial for murder because the charges were brought in the wake of a documentary where Durst was heard confessing to murder to himself in a mirror, but he was mic'd in a documentary about the death of Susan Berman, his best friend, who was killed in Beverly Hills, and the death ultimately of his wife, who it is believed he is accused of killing Susan Berman, his best friend, because she knew that he had killed his wife, which was a murder that he had apparently gotten away with. This is a fascinating case of human, a fascinating look at the human condition, I should say. He's old, he's sick, you can hardly hear him talk, but he is compos mentis, and he is being held to account, but he is, it's hard to think of him as anything but a very bad guy. He has now officially, for the record, denied that he killed Susan Berman. I, for one, don't believe it. But this kind of very sad and pathetic coda to the story is happening now. And it doesn't feel like great justice because he's old and sick and has gotten to live most of his life as a free man. I have to wait for the verdict. That's my wax off.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Wax On, Wax Off. When we come back, our interview with Hamilton and Girls 5 Eva star Renee Elise Goldsberry. Stay tuned. Emily Vogel and Andy Ortiz, the hosts of the Rap Women podcast Unwrapped, recently sat down with Renee Elise Goldsberry to talk about her Emmy nomination for Hamilton, her work on the Peacock series Girls 5 Eva, and her advice for women trying to break into the industry. Take a listen.
Hey, Renee, welcome.
How are you?
Good. We're so excited to have you here with us today.
I'm so excited to be here with you guys. It's a beautiful summer day, almost a summer evening.
Yes, yes. Well, also, congratulations on your Emmy nomination. That's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm still pinching myself.
Well, it's crazy.
Have you said it out loud yet? Emmy nominee, Renee Elise Goldberg.
You know, I was so focused on being excited to get invited to the party. I think just the sound Emmy nominee is still, it's still new. I just kept thinking how much fun that night is going to be. But now, yeah, I really I didn't see it coming, guys. I didn't see it coming. Hamilton was a pretty long time ago, and it means a lot to me. And fortunately, I think it meant a lot to a lot of people, but it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes. So basically, I think it was, 2015 when you were cast for your role in Hamilton, and 2016 crazy. In 2016, I think, when you did your last performance. Is it strange to see this all still going on and the hype around Hamilton still going?
Pretty soon, we might get to a place where it feels like something that's, you know, in the rearview mirror. I definitely meet young people that say, oh my God, when I was a kid, I just loved you. You know, like I'm already kind of there, because 2016 doesn't feel like that long ago to me. But if you were in junior high or high school, you know, it was quite a long time ago. And I think the pace of, you know, time, you know, moving now in COVID, there are so many things we want to kind of forget about and move on. It's easy to make it like a chapter that, you know, existed before. But Hamilton has, you know, continuously surprised me, you know, just because it just keeps popping up into the world in ways that, you know, teach me new things about why it was important. And so I think bigger than the excitement of getting another possibility of an award, I think is the relevance that it has, and I think the usefulness that it continues to be in a world that is always surprising. It's really always surprising.
I think, yeah.
I did not know in 2016. I could never have seen what the world would have looked like 5 years. You know, when Hamilton came out on Disney Plus, I had no idea why it would be needed when we filmed it. It's a surprise.
Wow. And I think one of the such a big reason why the show, though, was so groundbreaking and is still so talked about today is especially when it comes to the diversity of the cast. Do you think, you know, what effect do you think this had on the theater community as a whole? And do you think theater now is more inclusive because of it? Kind of looking back these years, have you seen a change?
I remember so many conversations about, you know, are you surprised that you're playing Angelica Schuyler, or this is so special, or this is so groundbreaking that the show is cast in this way, and the world is never going to be the same now that this has been successful and we've learned that we can do this and it works. And honestly, I think what's most surprising is that the world doesn't change quite as fast as we thought it would. I think things seem like an anomaly, like, oh, you cast this show that way because you were whatever. It was theater. It works because it was Hamilton. I do wish that it really meant that everything was different. And you could always, you know, every new historical period piece we saw, you know, it would be cast, you know, in really creative ways. I don't think we're doing that. But I do think that the fact that the comp is there still matters. And I do believe that we inch forward in the positive direction.
If you, as Renee now, seeing everything that Hamilton has done, seeing that everything, you know, Angelica has done for people, what would you tell Renee of 2016? If you could go back and tell her anything, what would you tell her?
Oh, my goodness. I'd probably tell her to... you know, take a deep breath and be a little less stressed out. I think so much work was already done for me. And I think I show up every day, and I think a lot of us do, and we recognize, you know, the bigness of a moment, and we think we need to, you know, fill it in a way, as opposed to just standing in it and recognizing that there's something lifting us up from underneath and we can enjoy the ride. I think I would probably calm down just a little bit, but I'm proud of myself because I was aware at the time that the most important thing to do was to love those people. And I did that and to enjoy a moment that I would never forget. And I would never really truly be able to explain. And I know that I did that. And maybe I would say, if there's anything you don't get right, you'll have another chance in a couple of years. Maybe I would let myself know that this isn't over. I could not have seen that coming.
I like the take a deep breath and don't be so stressed. That feels like evergreen advice. Like, that's something I would tell Andy of like 6 days ago, because that's just where we're at in life right now.
You know, when you asked the question, I was thinking more about myself during COVID than even myself in 2016. I think the person that needed that advice more was me in that year of 2020.
It was a strange year. I still have to actively remind myself that it's 2021 now. Like, we lost a whole dang year. And it's so weird to me because I'm like, oh yeah, that happened like, I don't know, a couple months ago. Like you said, 2016 does not feel so far away. And then I have to be like, oh no, 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 no. We lost a whole year with COVID.
But did we lose it? Because when I think about, there are some lessons learned. And one of them is that take a deep breath. You know, we were forced to, you know, that kind of ground yourself, you know, put yourself in your own room. I think that's kind of what I know to do now. Put myself in a room and sit down for a minute and have a COVID break or a COVID weekend just to take some stock before I go back in and try again. So I do feel like there are some lessons learned, and I'm proud that Hamilton was a you know, a bright light in that time. I'm really proud. I didn't know that that's what we were going to be when we filmed it, but when I look back, it makes me feel. I think, you know, the value of light is only, you know, it's never as great as when it's a dark time. So the advantage of a dark time is that people get to really step up and art gets to be what it's made to be. And well,
it absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's it. That's pretty much it. You know, the value of a dark time is that art really gets to do what you know, just to kind of complete its purpose.
Well, and you're right. It absolutely was a bright spot because I got to watch Hamilton with my family. And I unfortunately did not get to see you on Broadway. I'm in Chicago, so I've yet to see a Broadway show, and I want to.
In Chicago?
I did. I'm wearing my Hamilton Chicago shirt. I don't know if you can see, but these are like Hamilton dancers up on top of the stars and the Chicago flag. It felt like it was the right day.
That's amazing. Yes.
Here, let me move my mic out of the way and we can get a full shot there. Hey. Yeah, it's the Chicago flag with like the Hamilton dancers. And I saw it, and I actually saw Hamilton twice. So I saw it once, and then my mom, who never wins anything, by the way, wins the Hamilton lottery seats. And so she was like, I mean, do you want to go see it again? I was like, yes, I want to see it again. What question is that? So when we went back the second time, I had eyed this shirt the first time, and I was like, do I need a shirt? And then we got there. My mom was like, you're still staring at it. Just go get it. And this is like the comfiest shirt I own. So I feel like a great purchase was made.
Soft cotton.
Exactly. Yeah,
I love the fact that, you know, that some of that, oh, you missed it if you weren't here, is gone because it was on television. And surprisingly, the fact that it was on television doesn't mean that there's not a value of going and sitting in a theater and still seeing it.
Well, and so that's what I was going to ask you is, do you hope that more shows follow suit? Because I think this was a great move to televise Hamilton. I think it did a lot for accessibility for those who can't make it to the theater, for those who want to see the original Broadway cast and still see, you know, local theater. So do you hope that more shows follow suit? Because I do.
I hope they will. And I know they will. I know they will. It's funny because theater was something as I was growing up that I didn't believe you could capture in a camera of any sort. I didn't believe you could really put that magic into a box and recreate it or mass produce it. And, you know, the filming, the directing, the editing of, you know, the lighting, everything has gotten so good. I think they really have figured out the formula. I think there's something uniquely special about being in a theater. And there's also something different and singular and uniquely special about what happens when you bring the magic of filmmaking to the magic of theater. I think it creates something totally different, and I love it, and I know they will continue to do it because when they get it right, it kills.
Well, and especially in Hamilton, like Eye of the Hurricane, being able to have that aerial shot and to see it, that was gorgeous.
Gorgeous. And, you know, the beauty of it also for the performer is that we actually get to see the show.
That's true.
We get to see the show.
Well, and I mean, how do you feel about it? Having seen the show, do you like look around and think about your castmates and you're like, God, we're great. We did a really great job.
We're pretty awesome.
Mostly, I think they are amazing. I saw you do that from the side, or I heard you do it, you know, on the speaker when I was in my dressing room, and what you're doing is amazing. And I was right. You're a giant. And I think, thank you, Tommy Kail, the director, for, you know, for the beautiful job that you did, you know, really taking care of us to make sure that we, more than didn't look crazy, I think the fact that you captured some of the really special moments that really, you know, basically what happens, you can't capture an entire run of a show. You only capture that one night. That's all we have in the Disney film is that one night, that one time we were doing it. But there are certain things that were always there, like the joy I had to be with my sisters, you know, in the Skylar sisters, the way we would just, you know, all of the joy that we're building through the entire number, how it would erupt from us at the end before we ran off stage. Like, he could have cut out of some things, but because he knew the show so intimately, he hung around for some things, for some moments, for some of the chemistry and some of the joy and some of the pain that really did always live there that you might have missed if you didn't know to look for it.
Well, and you know what's funny is those moments now live on. Hold on, I'm going to choke. All right, we're living. I'm just getting over being sick. So, yeah, nobody freak out. Unless I hit the deck, nobody worry about me. We're going to be fine. But these moments also live on forever on TikTok, because obviously I'm on Hamilton TikTok, and that's absolutely my feed. And people zoom in on these like little moments. There's like a little moment between, you know, Jasmine Cifas Jones and Anthony Ramos that they're like, those two. And it's like, it's really, really adorable.
It happened right there.
How does it feel to have been a part of that, to have like watched that happen? You're like, I was there.
There are a few Hamilton love stories that are still growing strong, and I think they'll live on forever. And it feels good to have been in the room where that happened. Forgive me. But you know, it's beautiful because it was such a unique experience. And when I joked about it, the gift that keeps on giving, I did mean that I have an Emmy nomination. But truly what I meant is there are friendships and relationships and lessons learned that are that stay with us. So people, it's not like a show that you leave and it's something in your past. The responsibility of lifting it up is no longer there, but the gift of it stays, especially when you look at some of those relationships and the love.
Well, one relationship I absolutely want to talk about, obviously the Skylar sisters, you and your sisters singing The Longest Time. It's not even a Hamilton song, but that video you guys put up, singing The Longest Time. It's one of my absolute favorite things. It's like a jazzy rendition, but like you just absolutely kill it. And the joy that's in there, I love that video. I was hoping it would run at the end of like the Disney Plus Hamilton as like a Marvel bonus scene there. That's what I was hoping for.
You probably would have had to pay Billy Joel too much money. I tell you, the truth of that moment, and I'm glad you said it. It's one of the, you know, that's the thing. That was a really brilliant, Lin-Manuel Miranda should get all credit for most things, but that also, and that's just, you know, knowing how to capture some of the magic around it, you know, that was percolating at all times and sharing it with the world. You know, he literally took my phone one day and put me on Twitter. I think Philippa Sue took my phone one day and put me on Instagram. But Pippa and Jasmine and I used to sit in a very little dressing room in the Public Theater, and we used to just harmonize together. And I think one day he just caught us doing it and he put it on Twitter and he was like, "You're blowing up! You're blowing up, Mike! We broke the internet!" You know, he speaks in superlatives because he's a rapper. And so we did it a couple times, and we did it, you know, we used to sing a little harmony, you know, kind of jokes about, you know, gonna do a show for Obama. You know, I mean, when anything time something was happening, we would put it in three part harmony. Almost nothing was added to the show from off Broadway to Broadway, except for harmonizing licks at the end of the Skylar Sisters because Philippa and Jasmine and I did that so often, and they thought it should be in the show. So they added that stuff at the end just because of what we were doing in the dressing room. And then one day, you know, too soon, but perfect timing, Philippa left the show. She was going to leave the show. And while we were trying to wrap our heads around that, we were sitting in the dressing room and we were saying goodbye, and we decided to sing that song. If you say goodbye to me tonight, there will still be music left to write. And we just started singing, you know, whoa, for the longest time. It makes me emotional thinking about it. Because, you know, but, you know, it was really just, we love you. We'll always love you. We don't know who we're going to be when you're gone, but we'll, but this will always remain. And we just started singing it. And I'm, and the beauty of that, the beauty of social media, the beauty of any true moment that actually is captured and shared is, look at all this time later, it moved you too.
Yeah, I want to check in on Emily real quick. Are you crying?
I'm like, always crying. It's like melting. That was so beautiful. Oh my
God. I'm always crying. I always cry when I think about those people. I love them so much. Yeah. So, and that's kind of full circle. As I said, you know, it took me a minute to recognize, you know, the prestige of an Emmy nomination, because all I was thinking about is, it's going to be a party. You know, I'm going to be with my friends. You know, we promoted that show, you know, in my guest room. And, you know, we were on a Zoom tour promoting the show, and we were not together. We have not been back together. So the Emmys, the present to us in the nominations is the hang.
So the Emmys are like, they're going to be lit. The Skylar sisters are going to turn up.
Yeah, we'll be masked, but we will be there and we will be lit.
The Skylar sisters will be turning up responsibly.
Responsibly. Yes.
So one thing I want to ask, and I'm not going to ask you to pick a favorite because I know it's impossible, but I do want to know if there's a standout performance in your mind of someone who played Angelica that was not you, because when I went and saw it in Chicago, and I saw
Karen Olivo.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
She killed it.
Yeah. And so does Emmy Raver Lampkin kills it. She's actually, yeah, she did San Francisco and LA, and she understood me on Broadway. And, honestly, I've only ever seen those two. So that's the reason why I can't go down the list of all the brilliant women that have come before me. I mean, after me, and probably before me, depending on what your, you know, personal preference is. But what I can say that I always knew, because I have replaced many amazing women in my life on Broadway, is that, you know, I knew that I had this opportunity to be the first. I knew that that never meant that I would be the best. And I was really proud of the opportunity to start down a path, like the path that I thought, you know, really amazing women should tread. And, you know, one of the things that meant so much to me about starting it off with that group of women, you know, they one of the most brilliant choices, and they made a lot of brilliant choices in the creation of the show, but one of the most brilliant was to take some time to focus on the women, because they didn't have to. History didn't. You know, history didn't spend any time talking about them. They didn't have to do that. I credit Ron Chernow, who wrote the book that, you know, inspired this, because of the time he took discovering who the sisters were. And obviously Lynn's brilliant choice to break some historical truths and break some dramatic formulas that say, don't take a minute for the second sister's song that doesn't move the plot forward. They broke some rules because they thought it was important to tell women's stories. And that meant that when we were there together, we really had to love each other. And we did. We took a lot of time. And anybody that was ever playing a Skylar sister on whatever night, if somebody wasn't there, before we ran out there, we just loved each other. We were like, you know, we're doing this together. We're making it through. And I feel like that's a tradition of every single woman that's played Angelica or Peggy or Eliza. And I'm really proud of that. And I could spend the rest of my life watching amazing women put their signature stamp on Angelica and learn a lot from them.
Well, if we can, I would like to get just an official like apology from you for how hard it is to sing along with your songs, particularly Satisfied. Because listen, this is my favorite song from the show. Everyone's got their own. I'm sure Emily has her own. But like, I've been telling Emily about this for like a week and a half. My best friend in the world just got married over the weekend, and she asked her to give a speech. And I very seriously considered doing like a toast to the groom to, and like to the bride and like trying satisfied. But Renee, I can't.
You don't know that you couldn't do it. And the beauty, let me tell you why. Next best friend that gets married, let me tell you why you can do it. Because, and I can speak as an authority on this. You can't start the song anymore and finish it by yourself.
That's a great point.
Has become a little, there's a little happy birthday going on in there. In that, if you start it, people will join. So the beauty of it is that, you know, you would say, toast to the groom, undoubtedly, a bunch of people will start saying, to the groom, to the groom, to the groom, to the bride, to the bride. And out of nowhere, if you're by yourself in a field, somebody will start echoing that from somewhere. It's a beautiful thing. I did get an opportunity to toast Philippa Sue when she got married to Stephen Pascal. And I did. I absolutely did, because I couldn't resist say a toast. I didn't go much further. And that's another thing you can do. You can start it and then not, and then cut out before the wrap. That's what you do.
You know what? Yes. Now I have regrets. I'm going to give her a call once we're done here and be like, can you just get married again? Can we just do the reception again real quick? I need a second shot at this. But I will tell you, I know I can't sing that, because the single karaoke song that I can do flawlessly is Prince Ali from Aladdin, and that's all I got.
That's so hard.
It's so fun though. I like imitating voices, and that really gives you an opportunity to like play in different realms. And that's, for whatever reason, that's the one I can do. Only the Robin Williams version, not like the stage version.
Not the Will Smith version. You have a version?
You know what? I could do Will Smith. I can, because that's got a good groove to it. Yeah, I get in that one, but otherwise. Well, it is my go-to. Now, obviously, we have asked a lot about Hamilton, but you know, Renee, you know we have to ask you about Girls 5 Eva. Because here I am going to put you on the spot. Who's more fun for you, Angelica or Wiki?
Ooh, Wiki. I mean, Angelica.
I think that's more of a struggle.
Wiki?
That's a pretty quick answer.
Only because, Angelica, I think, is so much of that character is so much of me that I think people see a lot, maybe, or assume a lot in public. I think Wiki is a lot of me behind the scenes. I think people think that's like a big stretch, like that, you know, unless I've been told by friends that know me well, unless you know me well, you don't know just how stupid and crazy I am. And so, the joy and the fun of it is the complete abandon. There's no corset involved in Wiki. There are a lot of wigs. There are a lot of hair and makeup changes, which is a lot of fun, and a lot of uninhibitedness. They're both extremely powerful, and like I said, it's a joy to pour into both of them. But Wiki has been, she's the latest horse I'm riding, and she's so fun. I'm bareback on Wiki. It's amazing.
So from what I understand, Meredith Scardino casted with Tina Fey the roles. And so when they called you up, like, how did they describe this character Wiki in the show?
Well, you know, they didn't have to say too much because they're such brilliant. Well, first of all, you know, their reputation precedes them. And they sent me a script, and they're such good writers. I mean, you get a lot of credit. It's just like Hamilton. You get a lot of credit as an actor for saying somebody else's or singing somebody else's brilliant lines. That's why the horse metaphor works, because sometimes you just want to hold on, you know, you want to just hold on and let that thing run. And that's the way she's laughing at me.
I'm bareback on Wiki. It's just so funny to me.
To the sunset. That's the nature of, you know, they gave me this beautiful pilot script, and then we got on a Zoom. And I just asked questions because I just wanted to understand, you know, with comedy, there's that line you're walking, and it's, you know, the bigger the I should say the thinner the line, you know, the more kind of dangers involved. And I just wanted to understand exactly, you know, what we were doing. And, And they just really perfectly describe the importance and the beauty of that relationship group, that group of women, and how far you can go with those kinds of friendships. I remember Tina explaining, you know, when you're starting on a series, you know, what's the most fertile soil in terms of a group of people, and this kind of comeback story of women who knew each other well, but had this history where they had hurt each other, but really needed each other. Like, the formula is so perfect for season after season after season after season. They're just so smart, and there's so much to learn from them. And I can't believe I have another season ahead of me in a couple of weeks. I can't wait.
We're so excited.
Yeah, we are so excited. But I think, you know, you bring up a great, you know, great point too, in talking about, you know, just the general focus of the series. And that is this group of women who are really coming back into their careers, and really focusing on this idea of ageism within the industry. And if I'm not mistaken, you kind of had your big break later on in your career. So much of our audience are, you know, women who are looking to either reinvent themselves or enter back into their work or their line of passion. What advice do you have for them?
Well, what I love about Girls 5 Eva is, you know, there are some things we're doing there that I don't know that women, middle-aged women, know they can do. And one of them is get together with some of your friends, put on similar outfits, and do some choreography in a mall. Like, who would think? Who would think? Like, we let our daughters do these things. We don't, there's so much joy that we don't think to allow ourselves, because I don't know. I mean, people don't do it. I mean, like, that's, you know, and when you do it, not only do you have so much fun, but you inspire other women to think about, hey, why don't we? Why don't I sing harmony with my best friend? I mean, you don't have to be a singer to have done that. When we were kids, we did this kind of stuff. And maybe we're waiting for permission. Maybe we're waiting to see it on television. I don't know. But that's an example of the kind of thing you need to, the kind of boundaries you need to question and push against in your brain when it comes to reinventing yourself. You don't have to have seen something before to for it to work when you do it. And you don't have to, you know, the idea of it being embarrassing should not stop you, right? I mean, that's one of the things I was worried about a little bit. You could think, gosh, I could do this Girls 5 Eva show, and I could look really silly, you know, with any jokes, with any world that would include a joke about Spanx, for example. You know, I don't know that that is necessarily the smartest career choice to talk about ridiculousness. I was actually recording an album, my first album, trying to get into the world of pop music at the time that I decided to do a television show about what a joke it is that middle-aged women would think there was any room for them in pop music, right? Like, that doesn't really make sense. You know, but why not? You know, and what if it's embarrassing, and what if it's ridiculous? It's honest, and I think honesty wins in the end. So anyway, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I hope there. I don't think Girls 5 Eva is the only thing on the landscape of television today, or even in film. Definitely not in theater, where you can see people doing things that are perhaps not age appropriate, and and you could sit back with maybe a bunch of kids and laugh at them, or you could jump in. You know what I mean? Jump in, do it too. You never know what's going to happen. And I would encourage people to do the latter.
I feel like you're speaking directly to me here, Renee. Like, I just feel really specifically targeted. Like, just because it looks ridiculous doesn't mean you can't do it. That feels like, Emily can vouch, this is a very, like, Andy big worry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tell my kids that. I have to say it to myself. I think that's the biggest lesson I've learned in my life, and I have to continue to learn. And that is, you know, the people that really do great things are really, maybe they're not comfortable with it, but they don't worry about, or they don't let the fact that it could look terrible on them stop them. I was telling my kids did a theater this summer, and my son got a pretty good part in it, and he's a preteen, and that's the age when the curse hits hard. You know, don't pay too much attention to me. Don't look at me unless I'm doing something really cool. And that just doesn't go with being in the theater. Do you know what I'm saying? You can't fade in and just kind of be the bland, blase, cool and do good in a play. It just doesn't work. And I said to him, you know, if you were on the basketball court, you know, all of this motion that wouldn't be appropriate somewhere else, all of that, all like your defense, all this crazy defensive moves that are ridiculous. Don't you think you look stupid doing that on a basketball court? And he said, no, that's what, the way you play basketball. I would never feel stupid doing that. And I said, there are probably a lot of kids that are sitting on the bench or in the stands that do feel silly doing that. And that's why they're on the bench or in the stands. And why you're on the court is because you are not thinking about how ridiculous you look doing it. I'm like, that's what you have to do when you're in a play. You have to put all of that out of your mind, all of the things that are, you know, that go beyond your comfort zone in looking stupid and take some real big chances. And the people that will do that are the people that other people pay to watch, right? And I don't think that rule only applies to people in the theater or on television. I think that works in the world of podcasts and in the world of broadcast television and the world of politics for sure, and teachers and lawyers and all the way around. Those people that are a little unconventional or are not afraid to be passionate win, even if they're wrong. It's crazy. So anyway, I encourage people to steal a little of that in their reinventions.
Could you please adopt me?
You're
I'm 27, so I know that like legally you can't, but like,
hey, you know what was so smart about adopting you is that you can do some laundry around here.
I would, you know, do it. I mean, for you, I would do it.
Because this room I'm in right now is a king size bed with your name on it. Okay. You can have your own. You've got a closet and a bathroom, girl. I'm ready for you. I'm ready.
Listen, just don't tell my actual mother that I agreed to do laundry, because that's
We can share. She can bring. You can give her all the presents for Mother's Day. All I need is some help folding these clothes, girl.
Excellent. Well, if you're up for it, Renee, we have a super, super quick game.
All right, on. Flash round.
Emily,
okay,
rapid fire. You ready?
Rapid fire. It is called Satisfied or Not, based off your very popular, famous song, Satisfied, from Hamilton. So I'm going to give you a series of scenarios to you and Andy, and you got to give me a quick Satisfied or Not. Ready? Starting with you, Renee.
Okay. Got it.
You're on a deserted island with unlimited pizza, but no contact to the outside world. Satisfied or not?
Not.
Andy?
No, I'm satisfied. I'm really okay. No people and endless pizza. We're living the dream here. I am satisfied, at least for a good like 6 months.
I just kept thinking, I don't know, whatever crossed my mind, I was just like, but I'm thirsty. I don't need people, but I need something to drink with all this pizza. That's what I was thinking. Go ahead.
That's it.
Okay. Next one. You're wearing a super cute outfit, but you don't have your phone to post a photo on Instagram, so no one can see how cute you look. Satisfied or not?
Satisfied.
Same. I feel good about that. Like, I just feel good that I look good. Like, that's fine. And obviously I'm wearing it for a reason, right? Like, if we look good, someone's going to see it. We're going somewhere. So yes, hey. Satisfied also.
Yeah. If we learned anything from 2020, it's that you don't need a reason. You need to just look good for yourself. Okay.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. So last one, unfortunately, we're back in lockdown and you have to quarantine, but you're in a pod with everyone you love. Satisfied or not?
Satisfied.
Yep. I can't say it as nicely as she just did, but also yes, 100% satisfied. Everyone Woo! I love and everyone's safe and healthy. We're living. God. We're great.
That's right. As long as none of them got COVID, I'm good, girl.
Yeah. As long as everyone's tested negative and getting vaccinated, we're turning up responsibly.
It's actually my dream in life. A little bit more time for some board games and binge watching with the people that I love.
Agreed.
Right there with you. Well, Renee, thank you so much for joining us. We've had a great time. And we'll see you hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon, you guys.
You enjoyed yourself.
I so enjoyed myself. I learned new things. I feel inspired.
You got a new daughter. I've got
a possibility of a new daughter. You know, oh my God, there's nothing better than being in your mid to late 20s. Come on, girl. Come on over and give me some of that. Give me some of that and that t-shirt.
I will. Yeah, I'll be there in about, you live in LA. I'll be there in like 4 hours. Thank you, Renee.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Renee.
And that is it for this week's episode of The Wrap Up. Thank you to all of our listeners. And remember to please follow or subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcast. And be sure to rate and review us and let us know what you think of the pod. See you next time.